Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode LXXVI. It's good to be the king. We've heard that Commodus took a hands-off approach to ruling Rome, but what was he doing with all that free time? It turns out, quite a lot. Commodus redefined what it meant to be an emperor. On one hand, debasing himself by fighting against the lower classes in the arena, and on the other, elevating himself to the level of a god and hero. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
The impression we're given of Commodus by all of the ancient sources is that he was entirely interested in indulging his own pleasure and not interested in any of the formalities of administration. And so they tend to concentrate, when they talk about his character, on the way that he entertained himself and what that means about him, which they're not always explicit about because they don't need to say it, but it means what he engaged in was sort of low status activities, which should have been far beneath him.
But it goes beyond that, though, because we kind of have an impression in our head at the moment, for people who have been listening to Emperors of Rome from episode I onwards, that Nero bad emperor, Caligula bad emperor, Domitian bad emperor, but Commodus kind of leaves them all behind in his dust.
Yeah, he's like all of them added together, isn't he?
And then some, and then kicked up a notch.
Yeah, certainly we've seen with Caligula that interest in chariot racing and indulging the self. He's got the cruelty of all of them and the paranoia of Domitian. The only thing I think perhaps he doesn't do is go into the theatre as Nero does, performing on stage, but he performs in a different arena. So yes, he kind of gets the most evil depiction of all, which is why he is seen as responsible for the fall of the Roman Empire by people like Gibbon.
Dio, our contemporary source for this time, seems to really have disliked Commodus personally as well as professionally. What I particularly like is how strongly worded he was when he talked about Commodus. So can you tell me, what did he say about his character?
Dio, we remember, is personally affected by Commodus because he's alive and having to function as a senator during this reign. So he's got first-hand experience of him, which is a good thing, but he's also got first-hand experience of suffering under him, which means he is biased. And he says, for example, in book 73, the Commodus book, that Commodus was not naturally wicked, but on the contrary, as guileless as any man that ever lived, which is quite surprising. So he's innocent in some ways. He's simple. His great simplicity, however, together with his cowardice, made him the slave of his companions. And we've seen that with the way that he gave way to people of lower status, including freedmen. And it was through them that at first, out of ignorance, he missed the better life and then was led on to lustful and cruel habits, which soon became second nature. So there's this idea that he's been led astray, and then that kind of becomes his character.
So very simple kind of person who's easily led around. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, he is very young when he becomes emperor.
Yeah.
But everyone was hoping for better, with him having been guided by Marcus Aurelius for the formative years at least. But that's not what they get. And Dio, perhaps in an effort to distance Commodus from his father, saying it's not Marcus Aurelius' fault, says that it's down to him mixing with the wrong crowd once he gets to be emperor. He also says Commodus was a greater curse to the Romans than any pestilence or any crime. This is the kind of sententious thing that ancient historians like to say about emperors, though. I mean, it reminds me, this is not an emperor, of Tacitus saying that Livia was a curse to the Roman people. Okay? And Commodus is kind of in the same box here. And we're specifically told that he's kind of rejecting his father's lifestyle. And I guess this works psychologically for us, if you've been brought up to think that despite being emperor, simplicity is all by this pious, saintly figure of your father. And you might well react to that by saying, well, I've got all this money and power. And
yeah.
Do what I want.
Yeah. That power seems to go to his head and he becomes very megalomaniac. And I've got written down here, we basically need to read out Dio 73:15 and go through it. So do you want to turn to your lerb page?
It is pretty fabulous. Bits of this I put up as slides in class, and it never fails to astonish. We should remember, I think, that the megalomania perhaps in part comes out of the paranoia that followed that early conspiracy. A lot of this in Dio chapter 15 is concerned with renaming, which I think does often go along with megalomania.
Mm.
So Dio says he actually ordered that Rome itself should be called Commodiana. That's really bad.
Yeah.
Renaming Rome.
Rome itself.
You can't do that. It's still called Rome now. And of course, it's supposed to be named after the founder of Rome, Romulus. So what are you saying about yourself that you can actually usurp the name of Rome? You can usurp Romulus's position. It can't be done. He's really saying that he's terribly important. And remember, we said in the last podcast, he didn't actually do that much building. So he doesn't even have the right to start renaming it Commodiana. He wants to rename the legions Commodian. That's not actually as extreme as it sounds, except that it sounds like it's all of them. But remember, there are legions that are called Augusta or named after emperors.
Yes, Augusta 1, Augusta 2.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted to name the day on which these measures were voted Commodiana. So starting to mess with time and with the calendar. Upon himself, he bestowed, in addition to a great many other names, that of Hercules. We'll come back to that one.
Sure.
Rome he styled, when he wasn't calling it Commodiana, the immortal fortunate colony of the whole earth, for he wished it to be regarded as a settlement of his own. Now, this again is playing around with the name of Rome. Oh, it's hard to say whether it's worse than the Commodiana name. Commodiana is renaming it and kind of wiping out its history, its legendary history. Calling it a colony suggests that the real power lies somewhere else. It's a very strange move if it's true. It's immortal and fortunate, but it's apparently not the center of power anymore. And what does that imply? That all the power really resides in Commodus and that Rome is beneath him as a...
I like that you're trying to make sense of this.
Well, yeah, it is trying to make sense of possibly the words of somebody unhinged. I sort of don't believe all of it, I have to say.
Yeah.
Even as I read it out, and even though I say it's Dio who's more reliable than our other sources, it seems too extreme. But anyway, I go on because there is more. In his honour, a gold statue was erected of 1,000 pounds weight, representing him together with a bull and a cow. That just seems excessive. And presumably the bull and cow are there to be sacrificed to him. Does that depict him as a god? It's not entirely clear. Finally, all the months were named after him. This is my favourite bit. So that they were enumerated as follows. Now, these names are meant to be honorifics that he'd been given himself. So we go through the months and they're renamed after his honorific and real names.
Yeah, okay.
So Amazonius, Invictus, which means undefeated. Felix, which means fortunate. Pius, Pius, Lucius, Aelius, Aurelius, Commodus, Augustus, Herculeus, Romanus, Exuperatorius. Exuperatorius means outside and above everything. Ex outside, super above. So okay. Kind of extraordinary, the most extraordinary.
What's Amazonius?
Amazonius means that he's
amazing.
Defeated the Amazons.
Yeah.
Who don't exist. So, interesting. For he himself assumed these several titles at different times, but Amazonius and Exuperatorius he applied constantly to himself to indicate that in every respect he surpassed absolutely all mankind superlatively. So superlatively mad had the abandoned wretch become.
The abandoned wretch.
Yeah, that's Commodus.
Yeah, okay.
And to the Senate, he would send messages couched in these terms. They must have been really long messages. The Emperor, Caesar, Lucius, Aelius, Aurelius, Commodus, Augustus, Pius, Felix, Sarmaticus, Germanicus, Maximus, Britannicus, pacifier of the whole earth, invincible, the Roman Hercules, Pontifex Maximus, holder of the tribunician authority for the 18th time, imperator for the 8th time, consul for the 7th time, father of his country, to consuls, praetors, tribunes, and the fortunate Commodian Senate, greeting. Hi! It's a long time to say that. It's also noticed the Commodian Senate.
Yeah, yeah.
They've kind of got a Commodus wash.
They would have loved that.
Mm. That's the end of that quote, but the chapter goes on. Vast numbers of statues were erected representing him in the garb of Hercules. And it was voted that his age would be named the Golden Age. And that this should be recorded in all the records without exception.
Let's first talk about the Hercules thing. Explain that.
it is a Hercules thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Commodus actually thought of himself or portrayed himself as the son of Jupiter, as Hercules himself.
Hercules is the son of Jupiter.
Is it a reincarnation thing or it was just...
Well, I mean, our main evidence for it outside of Dio stating that is from the statuary evidence. And he does seem to have aligned himself so closely with Hercules in so many different ways, not just depicting himself with Hercules, but himself as Hercules, which is different to, for example, Augustus celebrating Apollo by building a temple to him. That very closely aligns Augustus with Apollo, but he never represents himself as Apollo. So this is something different because there's a very famous portrait statue of him, a portrait head, where he's got the lion skin of Hercules over his head.
Mm.
It's in the Capitoline Museum in Rome. I strongly advise anyone to go see it if they're in Rome. It's fabulous. And he's also got lots of other symbols of Hercules around him. It's actually a bust that goes kind of down to the torso, and he's carrying the apples of the Hesperides, which is one of the things that Hercules had to collect as one of his labors.
Yep.
And it represented his kind of transition to immortality. And there's a little Amazon depicted right beside him. He's a conqueror of the Amazons.
And this is just what we have, though.
You know? We also have coin evidence.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of coins. You can always recognize it because it looks like a bloke with a big hood on, and it's the lion skin, right, which Hercules always wears. And often you can see the club as well, the club of Hercules. Because, you know, Hercules is a bit of a brute.
Mm.
He uses a bow and arrow sometimes, but he's not so much a traditional warrior as someone who goes around clubbing people. And so the club is there on the statue and in these coins. So there does seem to be this transition into being Hercules.
Yeah.
And what that implies is, as you say, depicting himself as the son of Jupiter. So there's a kind of distancing from Marcus Aurelius going on, which is interesting, given the way he's depicted as being nothing like Marcus Aurelius. That would indicate that he's doing that a little bit himself. There were paradigms for this. For example, Alexander the Great had been rumoured to be the son of Zeus, who's just the Greek Jupiter, rather than of Philip II of Macedon. So he's kind of putting himself in that model, which are big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I was about to say, but Alexander the Great kind of earned that right. A little bit.
Well,
you know.
He's certainly got a better reputation.
Yeah.
And yeah, he'd certainly, you know, he carried out a lot more military activity and done it successfully than Commodus had. So it's kind of self-imposed glory in the case of Commodus. He's also associating himself with someone who's a conqueror, who's associated with the military. Hercules is very popular with the military for obvious reasons. Mm. They're both strong, virile character. And particularly associated with gladiators. And this is also a role that Commodus took on. So he's kind of suited to Commodus in that way, or at least what Commodus wants to be represented as. And also, Hercules became a god. He's one of the rare characters in mythology who transitions from being mortal to being immortal. So this indicates some kind of aspiration on Commodus's part. One that he would have expected, I guess, seeing as all the previous emperors for this century have become gods. He will not be.
The other thing that Dio brings up is that Commodus remodels the Colossus of Nero / Colossus of Sol at that point.
Dio says he actually cut off the head of the Colossus. It's a big operation.
For those who came in late, that's a massive statue which was next to the Colosseum. And when I say massive, I mean, Nero really did something quite amazing with it.
Yeah, Nero had put it as a statue of himself in the doorway to his villa.
Mm.
And it had been, because Nero was so unpopular, later remodeled to be that of the sun god.
And moved next to the Colosseum.
Exactly.
Which moved down the hill.
Why the Colosseum's called the Colosseum.
Yeah.
But now Commodus cuts it off and substitutes it for a likeness of his own head. Then, having given it a club and placed a bronze lion at its feet so as to cause it to look like Hercules, he inscribed on it, in addition to the list of his titles, which I've already indicated, said Dio, because he's not going to repeat them all again, these words: champion of secutores, only left-handed fighter to conquer 12 times, as I recall the number, 1,000 men. So he's bringing together these two worlds of his alignment with Hercules and his life as a gladiator. Secutor, by the way, is a type of gladiator.
Yeah, it's the sword man.
Yeah, exactly.
Commodus the Gladiator. What gives and how much of a big deal was it?
It was a big deal because it's completely inappropriate for an emperor.
It's beyond completely inappropriate for an emperor. It's inappropriate for anybody who's a Roman citizen slash a senator slash the emperor.
Anybody of high status, certainly. You know, traditionally gladiators had been slaves or at least a very low status, maybe freed slaves. We think originally prisoners of war. So lowest of the low. They could get glory and acclaim by winning a lot.
Yeah.
But they were never going to be full Roman citizens. They were never going to be accepted. They always bear a stigma. I always think of this as the queen going on Big Brother. A misalignment of two kinds of lifestyle. It kind of reflects, though, something that's always been there, which is, it's really hypocrisy in Roman society. Because they admire the gladiators. They admire their bravery and their strength and their ability to face death. And, you know, they've always been sort of aligned with the Roman army. They're not the same as the Roman army. They're not fighting for Rome in the same way. They're entertaining instead. They're sort of a mirror image of the army, which is what Roman citizens should go and do, although God knows they don't really anymore. I mean, it's mostly mercenaries in the Roman army now. So the emperor doing this is in a way exposing that hypocrisy, that they admire these people and despise them at the same time.
I think you're giving him too much credit. So it's one thing for an emperor, and this might even be scandalous as well, to do these sort of activities in private, to pretend that they're a gladiator in, you know, the privacy of their own palace. And you had somebody like Caligula setting up his own racetrack and having a sleepover with the Greens, if I remember the slumber parties correctly, and that kind of thing. But Commodus did it in public.
Yeah. He not only did it in public, but he forced the Senate to come watch.
Yeah.
So it was compulsory for them to be there and watch this terrible misalignment of status going on. And they weren't allowed to get away, which again makes me think of Nero. Remember, he wouldn't let the woman who was giving birth leave the theatre when he was performing. This horrible control that these people can exert, the making people watch them make spectacles of themselves.
So it's one thing for an emperor to go into an arena and show off his stuff, but was he any good at it?
He seems to have been very good at it and built for it, which makes him quite different to his father. Remember, Marcus Aurelius, even though he was out on campaign a lot, was physically quite weak and frail. Commodus, on the other hand, is described by Herodian as well-proportioned and attractive, naturally blonde and curly hair, to complete the picture. And the Augustan history also says that physically he was well-proportioned, although it does go on to say his expression was vacant, as it usually is with drunkards, and his speech disordered.
So give him a compliment, then slap him around.
And that apparently he dyed his hair, made it shine with gold dust. Kind of seems very concerned with his own physical appearance from these descriptions as well. He's actually making himself look attractive as a performer.
I can actually buy that, though. If Commodus strode out onto the arena floor with his sword and waving to the adoring crowds, and his hair is glistening with gold dust, it kind of completes the whole picture, doesn't it?
It's a spectacle, all right.
Definitely
isn't it?
Spectacle.
I mean, the emperor being there is a spectacle, but then the emperor.
Sure, he looks like he's drunk.
With all the props, he looks amazing, you'd think. Yeah, and we're told, and remember, these are hostile sources. It kind of cuts both ways, because, of course, him being described as doing it at all, these people considered terribly immoral.
Yes.
But they do say he killed a lot of animals. You know, it would take bravery to do this, I suppose, although it makes me feel a bit sick that he did this. He killed 100 bears. He cut down all the domestic animals that approached him and also some that were led up to him or brought in before him in nets. He killed a tiger, a hippopotamus, and an elephant, and after luncheon would fight as a gladiator. Dio also tells us in a slightly earlier episode in 7310 that this is part of his Commodus just gave his life up to debauchery and pleasure. And he's the one who makes it clear to us that he's acting as a gladiator and involved in beast hunts in private and public as well. So that's the problem, the public. He says, for example, all alone with his own hands, he dispatched 5 hippopotami together with 2 elephants on 2 successive days. I mean, that's appalling, but kind of
impressive.
Oh, I don't want to say impressive, but I suppose it is. And he also killed rhinoceroses and a camel leopard.
Camel leopard?
Camel leopard.
Fancy
it's
giraffe.
A hard thing to say, yeah.
Fancy giraffe.
A hybrid of a leopard and a camel.
Yeah. That name should have stuck around.
It really should. So you get these lists of weird and exotic beasts that he killed. And this is two realms of power that have always been there. It's the power to bring these animals in. Mm. They don't exist in Italy. You know, you have to have money, you have to have sway. And then the power to actually be physically able to kill them yourself.
Yeah.
So the animals are almost, it's a bigger thing than the men that he kills in the arena.
But as far as fighting as a gladiator, it was never really a fair fight.
Dio tells us in book 73, chapter 20, that, and I'm going to quote here, that Commodus once got together all the men in the city who had lost their feet as the result of disease. And then after fastening about their knees some likenesses of serpents' bodies and giving them sponges to throw instead of stones, had killed them with blows of a club, pretending that they were giants. Very weird. It's like he's putting on some weird pantomime where he's chosen these disabled people who can't defend themselves. And then it may be related to the kind of labors of Hercules, that he's killing giants and killing snake creatures. Mm. You know, Hercules is a killer of monsters. So this is another indication that he's setting himself up as someone to be watched acting in the arena, very inappropriate for an emperor, but also as someone who carries out the labors of Hercules.
So Rome is a place that is dominated, it seems, by bread and circuses. If you keep the people happy and fed, then they're going to come along with you. So this is definitely, are you not entertained, Rome? I'm here fighting as a gladiator. I'm your emperor. What else can I do to keep you happy? So what did Rome think of all of this?
Well, according to Dio, it's not that the Roman public didn't enjoy it, but they were kind of put off by Commodus's extreme behavior. Dio says there was a rumor that Commodus was actually going to shoot spectators. He says, of the populace in general, many did not enter the amphitheater at all, and others departed after merely glancing inside. He does say partly from shame at what was going on, partly also from fear, inasmuch as a report spread abroad that he would want to shoot a few of the spectators in imitation of Hercules and the Stymphalian birds.
I kind of see that as a plausible concern.
Yeah, and it's yet another Commodus pretending he's Hercules putting on that performance, and it doesn't matter who gets in the way. The spectators can become part of the show, which is breaking the rules.
So even if he didn't draw a crowd, though, he's got a captive audience in the in the guise of the Senate having to be there.
Yeah, well, Dio, and he puts himself into this sentence, he says, here's another thing he did to us senators, which gave us every reason to look for our death, he said. It was so bad that we wanted to die. Having killed an ostrich and cut off its head, he came up to where we were sitting, holding the head in his left hand, and in his right hand raising aloft his bloody sword. And though he spoke not a word, yet he wagged his head with a grin, indicating he would treat us in the same way. So he's a really threatening figure. He's really intimidating.
Yeah.
And playing mind games with the senators. It's kind of odd that it's an ostrich as well, something.
Oh, well, you know, whatever you had on hand.
Weird.
This all kind of leads me to ask Commodus if he's okay.
You want him to go into therapy.
Well, is he?
Oh, if you take any of these sources as valid, and it's kind of hard to ignore all of them.
It's a lot of sources to take invalid.
And of course, it is backed up by that public persona, which you can't deny because it's on coin and statuary evidence. And this is Commodus' own projection of himself as Hercules. It seems more extreme to me than other emperors' adoption of heroic or divine figures. There must be exaggeration in these accounts. But there's something going on in his performance as a gladiator, which is not normal for Roman society. It does mean that he's an emperor doing something very extreme. He's an emperor at the extremities. I really hesitate to try and psychoanalyze someone who's been dead so long. You just can't do it. People have tried to do it with Caligula and with Commodus, and I don't think it's fair or viable, really. And what we can say is for the Romans there at the time, for these elite authors, he was completely unacceptable, and they might well have described him as mad.
And this is not normal.
No, this is entirely abnormal behavior for them. Not just the dressing up all the time and pretending to be someone else, or the participation in activities that are much too low status for him, but in the way that he's drawing everyone else into this, and they're just kind of cannon fodder for his entertainment and his own pleasure. It shows very little regard for the Roman people, and particularly for the Senate.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a senior lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in iTunes. Please leave a review there, as it makes us feel appreciated and it helps other people find the podcast. You can like Emperors of Rome on our Facebook page, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, it's been swell, Commodus, but it's time for you to go. So until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.